This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven, Joy 94.9's multicultural show with Mark and Hugh. On Driven represents peace and understanding in our multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the program or would like to ask any questions, you can contact us in the following ways. On Driven on Joy 949, SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair at joy.org.au. And the first one I gave you, On Driven on Joy 949, is actually Facebook.
In today's show, we're talking to Ryan, who is originally from Taiwan, but lived in South Africa before coming to Australia. We'll be talking to Ryan about his early life in South Africa, his travels around the world, and his work as a student advocate and volunteer.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Mark and Hugh, and our guest today is Ryan, who originally comes from Taiwan. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you for having me today.
You're welcome. Now, let's start the show by just tell the listener exactly where in Taiwan do you come from.
Sure. I was born in Taipei City, so everyone pretty much knows where that is, the capital of Taiwan. I was born there, obviously, and I left Taiwan when I was about 8 years old.
Okay. So, how many is in your family?
I've got an older brother, and obviously mom and dad, and that's about it. It's a quite a small family.
Why did your parents come here in the first place?
They did not, actually. Left Taiwan when I was 8 to go to Johannesburg, and then later I then migrated here myself at the age of about 17. Okay.
So your whole family went to South Africa?
They came and went, but they're currently in Taiwan.
Okay, so sounds interesting.
It's a bit complicated. Yeah, yes, it is.
So what do you remember of Taiwan as a child?
I remember good food. I remember a lot of deep fried food. I think one of the earliest memory I have of Taiwan was when the Tiananmen Square incident was on, and that clearly you know, made a lot of impressions. It's a sort of a kid. I remember there was a lot of tension between Taiwan and China at the time. I also remembered a few sort of we had to practice raids as well when I was a kid, and I think that there was a
practice raids,
bomb raids. So we had to, you know,
hide under desks and
that sort of thing, and the, you know, the alarms would go off and that sort of thing, and that was my memory of Taiwan. I think even as a kid, I was quite aware of the political situation Taiwan was in.
And for some of our listeners who may not know about that, what is the political issue?
For those that don't or don't know about Taiwan, basically the National Party of Taiwan, went from China to Taiwan in the 40s, and since then have ran Taiwan as a sort of a democratic country. Obviously, China's view about Taiwan is still that Taiwan is part of China, and that even though there's two systems, it's still one nation. So obviously, the tension has always been that Taiwan somewhat wants to be independent or operates as an independent nation, while China still thinks that Taiwan is pretty much part of China.
So is that similar to the way sort of Hong Kong is, in that it's a separate region but it's still Chinese?
No, in that Taiwan, unlike Hong Kong, which is a special administrative region, Taiwan is quite independent in that, you know, there's no direct influence from China.
Yeah, and with it, when you were a child, the tensions were quite serious there, so there was... The reason you had need to have sort of bomb raid training and that was that they thought that China were going to invade Taiwan. Is that?
That's right. And I think it got to a stage where my parents were maybe slightly fearful, but also it wasn't a sort of situation that they can see their children growing up in. So quite early on, I remember even as a kid, my parents sent me to, you know, English language schools to make sure that I was able to communicate in a foreign language should I need to leave the country. You know, and my parents started making arrangements quite early on to ensure that we do have somewhere to go to in case anything did happen.
So as a child, that must have been quite a scary thing to sort of know all of this is going on.
I think I was very oblivious too, and a quite an ignorant and naive child. You know, I played in the street. It never came across my mind that I would physically get hurt. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I saw that, you know, that something serious might happen, or maybe people with different political beliefs might be harmful, was when I saw what happened on TV at, you know, in relation to the Tiananmen Square incident.
How did that affect you personally?
I think there was a lot of you know, I don't like to use the word propaganda, but obviously the Taiwanese government capitalized on the incident as well by, you know, sending messages out to citizens and Taiwanese nationals about, you know, this horrible regime called the communist China. So obviously for me, that made me sort of quite patriotic to Taiwan, and I developed quite a strong sort of connection with the country.
Okay. This is On Driven on Joy 94.9. We'll come back to Ryan's story very soon. Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Mark and Hugh, and our guest today is Ryan, who originally comes from Taiwan. Ryan, before we go on with your story, let's talk about the music we played. The first track was...
Don't be too embarrassed.
I'm just quite embarrassed that, you know, people would judge me by the music choices. But I think the first track was Kylie. I think I discovered Kylie when I first arrived in Australia, and then I think we'll talk more about Australia later on. But that's when I think I guess the start of my gay life is, you know, Kylie. So I've always had sort of a soft spot for Kylie. The second track, I think Mark would know why the second track was picked. When he invited me onto the show, he said, oh, you know, pick some music that you can play. But I think I don't relate music with my life, so I was quite... you know,
you were struggling.
I was struggling. That's
it. So you phoned a friend, basically, didn't you?
That's right. I used one of my lifelines, and that happened to the reply was that, you know, do Coldplay. paradise. That's yeah. right. And I think it ties up with, you know, being Australia, and that to me, Melbourne is my paradise, I guess.
Oh, very nice. It is a really nice city. So
it yeah. is. It, yep. It's, yeah.
Okay, now, so we're going to use another song, a very short song, just to get into sort of the next segment of South Africa. Mm. So we'll play this and then we'll come back.
But that was actually three guys who looked like they were standing outside.
That's right. It was cover. Quite difficult to find a good track for that song. But the reason why I picked this song was when I left Taiwan at the age of 8 to go to Johannesburg, this was one of the first songs that were taught to me in a language other than English. So
so this language was Afrikaans?
Zulu. I believe so. Okay. And it was for a school play that we had to do as a kid, and one of the themes of the school play was to, you know, cultural diversity and around the world. And so our class decided that we would do something that's South African, something that's local. So to me, that was one of the first songs that I learned or heard, you know, got to know when I got there.
Okay. Did you have to learn the language?
No. When I arrived there, the obviously English was the language of instruction. So we all studied English at school. But then locals would study Afrikaans, or you know, if you were from a different culture, you obviously could study that language. Zulu was taught in primary school as well, but it wasn't taught in a serious way, but rather as sort of a cultural study.
So with you moving to South Africa, as a Taiwanese person moving to South Africa, was that an unusual thing to happen?
There were quite a lot of Taiwanese migrants, obviously, because South Africa was one of those countries where, you know, during the apartheid years, they didn't have a lot of political ties with other countries, and Taiwan had a strong sort of financial and political tie, so a lot of Taiwanese went there. But in South Africa itself, for example, the primary school that I went to, my brother and I were the only non-white kids at school.
Mm-hmm. So let me just ask a question here. Even though you're from an Asian background, you were accepted in the white society in South Africa?
Well, accepted, maybe, but I at the time, I didn't think of it that way. It was more about me living in a foreign country. Obviously, you know, when we tried to buy a house in a all-white area, we had to apply for permits and permissions from our neighbors and so on. And, you know, in terms of going to school, there were no restrictions for Taiwanese migrants because, you know, they were sort of the honorary white people. So in terms of that restriction, there weren't. It was more the difficulty for me was more sort of interacting with other school kids, and you know,
what was their reaction to you? I mean, you said you're the only Asian kids in the school. Were they a little bit funny towards you, or did they accept you just openly?
I'm a strong believer that racism is something that's learned and taught. It's not something that comes naturally. I remember that when as a kid, there was a lesson in class, or one of the kids asked something about, you know, people from different countries, and I think the teacher at the time said something like, oh, for example, Ryan is from a different place and he's actually yellow, not white. I think that was the first time that others, you know, school kids or other classmates sort of had to question and then wonder, well, what do you mean he's not white?
Suddenly you were different.
That's right. And it was made quite obvious that I was quite different because, you know, they didn't think that I was different because, you know, I interacted with them, I played with them. And you obviously had to be white in order to come to the school. So they were quite confused, I think. And
the teacher didn't think twice about pointing this out.
No, she thought she was doing the students a favor by pointing out the fact that there was a lot of, you know, different cultures and you know, Ryan just was happened to be. That's right. So I don't think she had the intention of, you know, of doing any harm, but rather she was trying to point out something. And I think that was the first time where I sort of seriously thought to myself, maybe there's something different about me. Prior to that, I just thought, you know, we were all kids, and even in Taiwan, there wasn't a sort of a cultural shock for me going from Taiwan to South Africa. It was sort of, you know, I was just changing schools almost, and that was the adjustment I had to make.
Okay. This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and we'll come back to Ryan's story very soon.
Melbourne's most lovable station is now giving you more reasons to listen. Joy 94.9.
Are in Driven on Joy 94.9 with Mark and Hugh, and today we're talking to Ryan. Ryan, just tell us a bit about that track.
I'm so speechless. I was told that since Adele is about to beat Delta Goodrem on the charts for, you know, having the longest period of, you know, number one album, that it will be safe to play her or anything related to her or a mix, it will be popular.
So you thought you'd do a Glee version just to make sure it was that little bit extra gay.
That's right, yeah.
Now, Ryan, we were talking about South Africa before the break. Why exactly did your parents pick South Africa?
At the time, there were several options floating, and one was obviously Canada and the other one was South Africa. But my parents also wanted to be able to send me to a sort of a foster home or with a guardian to look after me, because obviously they had to still stay in Taiwan to work. So the most viable option was South Africa, and they found a family that was from South Africa that was able to look after my brother and I. So I think that was what...
And how old were you both then?
I was 8 and my brother was 10.
So as an 8-year-old and even as a 10-year-old, didn't you find it a bit overwhelming getting sent to another country?
I thought I was going on an extended holiday. I think it only started hitting me, you know, after about 6 or 7 months that, you know, that I started getting homesick.
This holiday is going a bit long.
Yes, and, you know, I've got to know everyone in my class, and really it's not games and fun all the time. So I think it started to get a little bit difficult. And it's not dissimilar to, you know, what most international students or migrants, you know, have to encounter in a transition period. But I think the difference was that the guardians or the foster parents that I had, they were very supportive. They knew what they were doing and understood, you know, what was required of them. So they put a lot of plans in place to ensure that I was comfortable.
What nationality were they?
The foster mom was South African, and the foster dad was from Brazil. So he was a Brazilian.
So how did your parents find these foster parents?
I think was through some network that dad had at work. So he at the time worked for Fushu Federation that did a lot of cross-cultural networking with martial arts in Taiwan. So he was promoting martial arts, and obviously he came across a few people he you know, got to know that were from South Africa.
How good was your English when you first went to South Africa?
Just as shocking as it is now, unfortunately. So I think it initially it was quite difficult for me to understand why people needed to speak a different language when I first arrived in Johannesburg, and I kind of wanted to talk to them in Chinese, and I got really confused why they couldn't understand me. But you know, my English was okay. I could get by asking really simple things. Yeah,
but it must have got a little bit tiring for you having to continually learn English just to communicate with the people you were living with.
I think when you're quite young, you learn quite quickly. So to me, it wasn't a frustration. As you know, if I had to do this as an adult, I would find it quite frustrated. At the time, I didn't see it that way. I think kids are quite resilient. Mm. And instead of seeing it as a roadblock or something to be frustrated about, I just sort of, you know, thought that was a rule of the game. You just have to play the game and to get what you want.
Okay. So you were in South Africa for a while, so... And as we touched on earlier, during sort of the apartheid period, you were also there when the apartheid sort of period sort of finished. So how was that to experience? Mm.
Well, it was quite, I think deep inside, when you grow up in a country like South Africa, you know what's right and what's wrong. I think instinctively everyone knows. And I think I was quite happy that we've came out of an apartheid. And to put things in perspective, when I was growing up in Johannesburg, we were taught that, you know, everyone had their place. So we obviously had maids that were black, you know, we had gardeners that were black, and we had you know, people that the work, they were black. And you were taught, you know, you had your position, and you were obviously, you know, living in this house. You don't play with the black kids. Can talk to them, but, you know, you don't have extended conversations with them. You're not there to make friends. They clean the house and they leave. If you need their services, you call them. And you know, there was a place for everything, you know. So I knew what my position was, and I need to live with that. And I think when I started growing a bit older, and I think I was about 16 or 17 when the apartheid was coming to an end, and I was in high school when, you know, all this was happening, and our teachers, you know, taught us, you know, what it meant to, you know, go into democracy, what it meant to, you know, elect a president, what it meant to have this constitutional change. And I think for me, I was sort of happy because, you know, even though I was treated pretty much like a white citizen, there were a few incidents when I was a kid where I did feel that, you know, I was very different and I wasn't quite the same, and I felt that there's something that really needed to be rectified, and I was glad that, you know, the apartheid came to an end.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you actually in South Africa for?
Between the age of 8 till when I was about 17.
So that's a long time. Did you sort of grow apart from your parents a little bit during that time?
Yes, it was difficult for me to maintain a relationship with my parents, and mostly because I started to grow quite culturally different at, you know, quite a critical age where, you know, I was making friends, I was making life decisions, and none of those were what my parents would have thought that, you know, or what they wanted. Obviously, I had my friends, and, you know, we, you know, did things a certain way, and we were quite westernized. So I think culturally I drifted apart from them as well, and that has caused a lot of difficulties.
Has your parents acknowledged that sending you away at 8 year old was maybe the wrong thing to do?
I think in order for them to acknowledge it might require them to you know, reflect upon it, and I think it's just something that it's not spoken about. It's more like, okay, we did what we thought was the right thing to send you to a foreign country. There were, you know, all this tension in Taiwan, and we wanted you to have a better, you know, start in life. So I guess they did what they thought was right. So to me, I understood, you know, why they did what they had to do, and I sort of never really had to question it or to confront them about it.
Yeah, okay. That would have been a hard decision for them to make, really, isn't it?
I think so. And yeah, I can tell even till this day that, you know, my parents, when we do talk about South Africa, they tend to be quite quiet. So I know that, you know, deep inside they weren't all that happy.
Yeah. This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and we'll come back to Ryan's story very soon. Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Mark and Hugh. And our guest today is Ryan, who originally comes from Taiwan, but recently we've been talking about his time when he lived in South Africa. But before we move on with your story, Ryan, tell us who the last track was from.
Lady Gaga, obviously. I was recently told that I'm from the Madonna era. not even Kylie, but Madonna era. So I just want to set the record straight that I do listen to Lady Gaga, and I am maybe Lady Gaga era as well. So. Okay.
Didn't really sound like her, I don't think so anyway, but I don't really know Lady Gaga either.
It's a good remix.
Is it?
It's not a bad song. You were tapping away your feet, weren't you?
So. I know, it's annoying Mark today. He keeps telling me to stop tapping my feet. Anyway,
so,
Ryan.
So anyway, back to the story, Ryan. So let's get down to your gay era sort of thing. So when did you first realize that there was something different about you?
I think I always knew there was something different about me. Especially when I was growing up, you know, I didn't do the things that boys did. You know, I wasn't really into sports, even though quite weirdly that I'm actually into sports now. But, you know, when I was growing up, I always wanted to do the different things. You know, I wanted to learn how to cook. I wanted to, you know, watch the TV and do, you know, watch shows that the girls in the family were pretty
Madonna
much
well.
And listen to Madonna as well. Boy George and all that, but I think I was my worst enemy, that even though I always knew it was quite difficult for me to tell people that I was somehow different. And you know, when I was growing up in South Africa, there weren't a lot of information about, you know, what it meant to be gay. You know, they didn't talk about it at school with us, so I was, you know, somehow somewhat confused about, you know, what sort of label that, you know, that I required. But the first person that I came out to or, you know, really talked to about my sexuality was my brother. And he was only 2 years older. And I think I was, you know, maybe 12 or 13. I said to him, you know, I don't really like girls, you know, I like boys, you know, and I don't actually find girls as attractive as you do. So, you know, his reaction was, oh, maybe you just haven't found the right one, or yeah, the ones you hang out are, you know, with are pretty much ugly. But that wasn't the case, I reassure you. I hang out with very beautiful people, but it really was that you know, I just wasn't attracted, and there was no justification that was required or any further explanation. And he sort of understood, and he since then accepted me for who I am. And that goes the same with the guardians and the foster parents. I didn't have to, you know, have that conversation with them where, you know, say to them, you know, I'm actually gay. It was, you know, pretty much they knew, and, you know, over time, you know, they were quite sensitive to, you know, my request to do different things or to hang out with different people. So, there wasn't a lot of things that, you know, identified me as gay until I came to Australia.
Mm-hmm. The people you stayed with, they were really your parents, weren't they? You know, did you have to think about it before you told them, or did you just go up to them and say, by the way?
I remember that, you know, having this, it wasn't a conversation about sexuality, but about my behavior that I like to do things that perhaps, you know, or hang out with the girls in the family, and that conversation was more along the lines that, you know, it's pretty much okay if that's how you feel about yourself. So I think they were quite knowledgeable about what was happening.
Did you find it easier because they were your guardians rather than your parents?
Absolutely. I don't think I felt that I had to live up to a certain standard or be a certain person for them, because, you know, to them, I was, you know, someone that they looked after in the professional sense as well. So, there was never that, you know, barrier for me. It was quite an easy transition. And I think for a lot of young people out there is that, you know, sometimes we think we are our worst enemies, and we tend to overthink things. Up until these days, I never had to actually come out to people, even at work or even with my friends. You know, it's pretty much who I am. And, you know, if the conversation happens, so be it. But, you know, I wasn't, you know, ruled by my sexuality, or I had to go around with this tag saying that I'm gay.
So did you date any people in when you were in South Africa?
What's the question about when I lost my virginity? No,
no. That's why you.
I was very naive. I hung out with a few guys that I enjoyed the company. Their company, and you know, it didn't really lead to anything. Mm-hmm. Until I came to Australia.
Sure, yeah. So when did you come to Australia?
Towards the end, I was still 17 and about to turn 18, and I came here. Initially, I thought I'll come here for sort of a, you know, overseas working holiday. Maybe I'll study for a while, see how I go. South Africa by then had become quite difficult for me because the education system wasn't, you know, to my liking, and I felt quite frustrated that there wasn't a lot of things for me to do there, and you know, I felt like I was trapped inside basically sort of a jail. So coming to Australia was quite a relief. I felt quite liberated. Mm. And just to take a cheap shot, you know, when I came, Kim Beazley was the opposition leader and John Howard was the prime minister. And I thought, you know, if these people can become a political leader, surely I can make it in this country. So when I came here, you know, I after 6 months, I did my VC here, and then that led to a diploma, and since then I've stayed here.
Mm. What did your parents think about when you said I'm moving to Australia?
They were quite encouraging. They knew that I wanted something different, and they knew how I felt about South Africa. At that stage, Johannesburg was not a very safe place to live in, and obviously I express my feelings about, you know, trying to get a better education, and they certainly understood that, because you know that the whole purpose of going to South Africa was for me to get a better life, and you know, to get somewhere in life, and coming to Australia was no different. It was me finding my own place.
What about your brother? Did he stay in South Africa?
He came here for a few years. Obviously, he always was quite homesick in terms of Taiwan, in relations to Taiwan. So he went back to Taiwan shortly after. So he, you know, until this stage still has quite a lot of sort of cultural sort of ties with Taiwan. He still identifies himself as a Taiwanese, and he does a lot of, you know, Taiwanese, you know, cultural things, and I think he never quite got over he never quite transitioned in to that, you know, Western culture when he went to South Africa.
So he was the opposite from you, really.
He was and he was also very introverted, so I think he find that it was easier for him to cope in sort of an Asian culture.
So how did your parents react when he wanted to go back to Taiwan?
I think they were quite happy that they've got that they're getting their son back, I guess, and by then my parents were starting to get a bit older, and they felt that it was good to have a kid back home. So yeah.
Cool. So you moved to Australia. Was that to Melbourne, or is that where you've always lived?
That's correct. I did see Sydney for a little bit, but it just wasn't my thing. It was back then. Sydney was quiet, and this was like 12 or 13 years ago now.
Now you just realised your age. Yeah.
That's right.
You've already done that when you said about Beazley and Howard.
Sydney wasn't a place for me because I wanted something that was a bit different, a bit more arty, a bit smaller, and the there was quite a lot of different interactions between, you know, when I came to Melbourne, people interacted with me quite differently to compared to Sydney. So I felt that Melbourne was the place for me. And I think when you do your travels, sometimes you sort of just get that gut feeling that this is the right place to be. Yeah, and I've sort of stayed here ever since.
Okay. This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and we'll come back to Ryan's story very soon.
Listen to us right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
Our Tribune on Joy 94.9 with Mark and Hugh, and we're talking to Ryan. So Ryan, tell us about that track.
Obviously, it's by Vanessa Amorosi. It's called Shine. I think that song was quite important for me because when I came to Australia, it was on radio everywhere, and it sort of, to me... after living in Australia for a few months, I thought, you know, this really is my place to shine. And since then, I've sort of taken on that opportunity. And one thing that I am quite grateful to Australia is that it is a place of opportunity. It allows people to, expand on their horizons and be who they are. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that feeling and that sort of... you know, that I feel that I have towards Australia, the way that I conduct myself in the community is pretty much based on that.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in Australia now for nearly 12 years or so. Mm-hmm. So where are you at now with you in your life?
Right. Okay. So right now I work for university as an academic advisor. I advise students, especially international students, about issues that they may encounter. You know, a lot of the issues are transitional issues that they encounter when they come here to Australia. You know, a lot of... issues about, you know, being homesick, about how to study in a different environment and so on. Currently, I'm also the branch secretary of the National Tertiary Education Union. I do a lot of, obviously, it's all, this is a sort of a free, unpaid position. And, mm-hmm. and you know, since I've arrived in Australia, I've, you know, learned a lot about, you know, fair and equality, and that come across as my, you know, principle about fighting for people to ensure that everyone's paid equally, and that people should have the right to feel safe and secure in their jobs. And obviously, because of that sort of principle and you know, that indebtedness that I feel towards Australia, I'm also a volunteer solicitor for community legal service. So I feel that because Australia have given me so much, it's only right that I return some of that favour. And you know, it's also about trying to participate in the community. And you know, when I left South Africa, it was a place that I didn't feel like I would enjoy living. And when I came to Australia, I really enjoyed and I really loved Melbourne. And therefore, I feel that I need to contribute back somehow and make it a place that I want to see myself living mm-hmm. in.
So do you sort of see yourself as... Aussie, Taiwanese, South African.
Well, you do have a bit of a South African accent. So.
I have a very confused accent. I'm never quite sure what I am, you know. But I identify myself as an Australian. And that's because, you know, culturally I'm Australian and I contribute back to the community like any other Australian. So I feel that I'm an Australian now.
That's good.
Okay. So... no thoughts about going back to Taiwan anytime?
No. The boys are much cuter here in Melbourne as well.
Okay. Oh, well, that's true, isn't it? Look at us.
Yeah. Well,
unfortunately, we have come to the end of the show, Ryan, but thank you very much for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you.
That is On Driven for another week. Our thanks to Ryan for taking time out to come into the studio and have a very nice chat with us. Coming up next on Joy is Sharp Power Show, so stay tuned for another great show coming up. Thanks for joining us on Driven today. On Driven will be back again at the same time, 4 o'clock next Saturday afternoon, with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and, of course, around the world from Mark and myself.
Bye-bye.
Have a great week.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.